Welcome back to The Pulse, stories at the heart of health, science, and innovation. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Mike and Scott. Joining us now is Clara Moskowitz, an associate editor with Scientific American. She's here to talk about the commercial space race and space tourism. Clara, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So it seems some space travel will soon be available to the public?
That's right. One company, Virgin Galactic, is planning to fly their first passengers later this year. They have a spaceship called Spaceship Two, which is a suborbital vehicle. It doesn't make a full orbit around the Earth, but it kind of makes a giant arc into the sky. It all happens within a day, and you get about 5 minutes of weightlessness and a five-minute view of Earth from below, from the blackness of space.
So, Clara, what then is the typical experience like? You touched on it a bit, but do you strap in? How long does it take you to get to the, I guess, the suborbital area? Are you pinned back in your seat as the rockets are taking off?
Right. So it's all in a day's work for a suborbital trip. You strap in, you're wearing a spacesuit, but it's kind of minimal. It's not the big white or orange bulky thing you might be picturing on a NASA astronaut. And it takes about 2 hours to get up to space, more or less. And then, like I said, you have 5 or 10 minutes up there in space, and then another couple hours descent. And the ascent and the descent are going to have nice views as well.
Are they comfortable, the ascent and the descent? Or might you need an air sick bag?
You will definitely feel some extra G-forces, actually. I've been on a simulator on Earth that tries to give you the feeling of ascent and descent, and they can do that in a centrifuge by spinning you around and around. And it's pretty rough, I'll tell you. It's kind of exciting.
And how much will space tourists have to pony up?
So Virgin Galactic is selling tickets aboard its Spaceship Two vehicle for $250,000 each.
Wow.
And a competitor called X-Core has a Lynx spaceship that I believe is a bit cheaper, maybe around $100,000.
So this is a passion at this point for the very rich.
That's right. But the idea is once they get these things going and test out everything and scale it up, eventually, this could be a lot more reachable by people like you and me.
So let's take a look at fitness for a moment. It doesn't sound as if passengers are going to need to train as astronauts do, but it seems as if there's going to have to be some level of basic fitness.
I think that's true, and the industry is really struggling to decide just how much and just how much they're going to scrutinize their customers. So obviously, it's a lot less burdensome than traveling to space, and a lot wider range of people could probably handle this trip just fine. But like I said, you're going to experience some extra G-forces, meaning probably two or three times the weight of gravity on your chest pushing down into you. So if you have heart problems, it might not be a great idea. Probably training will be on the order of 3 days before your flight. You'll go down, you'll get in a simulator, you'll do blood pressure tests and other vitals, and they'll make sure you're fit. But it really remains to be seen.
So at this point, if the blood pressure works out and et cetera, somebody who's 80 and who's always wanted to do this might be able to get on board?
It's definitely possible.
Space travel, of course, is not without its risks. What are some of the risks that these companies are looking at this point?
Well, obviously, the big question is, you know, what happens when you have a major accident, not just a risk like a minor injury, but death, which is certainly possible. Everybody admits that spaceflight is dangerous. It has always been dangerous. And even though it's scaling down to average people and these suborbital trips aren't quite as intense as orbit, sending anybody off the face of the Earth involves some major risks. So when we have our first major failure, and most people do say when, not if, it'll really be a test of the industry to see if they can communicate to people that this risk is just something we have to accept in order to push this frontier into space.
So you have the risk, you have the relatively short time looking at Earth from outer space, 5 to 10 minutes, and you've also got the expense. Is there a line of people waiting to do this despite all this?
There actually is, yes. There's a wait list. Hundreds of people long. I believe Virgin Galactic has more than 500 people who have already signed up. You've got average people. You've got celebrities like Angelina and Jolie and Brad Pitt reportedly having paid for tickets. So there are many, many people who have dreamed of going to space. And this really is your best chance to do it.
So do these space vessels resemble NASA's space shuttle at all?
Not very much. In fact, Spaceship Two is a really neat design because itself, it's a mini space plane, and it gets carried up into midair by a much larger mothership plane called White Knight 2. So you have to picture just a really gigantic airliner. And White Knight 2 lifts Spaceship 2 up from below it. And then once it gets high in the atmosphere, about, you know, halfway, it just drops it in midair. And that's when Spaceship 2's rocket engines turn on and fire from below it, and it boosts it the rest of the way up into space.
And one benefit of this commercial space race, if you will, is that unemployed astronauts or underemployed astronauts are finding work.
That's right. A lot of NASA astronauts have retired with the retirement of the space shuttle just because there's a lot less opportunity to be going up these days. And the number one place a lot of them look is the commercial industry, which is hiring right and left for experienced space travelers who know, who have all the expertise they need in designing the next generation of vehicles to take people up into space.
Clara, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Clara Moskowitz is an associate editor with Scientific American.